Hey, Bruiser Buddies, this is Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty.
Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I am your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me for yet another episode. On this episode, my guest is Bubba White, who was also known as Moondog Splat and Goliath. We talk about Memphis, Japan, Fred Ottman, much more. So let's take a break, and when I come back, I will have my interview with Bubba White. So stick around.
Hey, you bums. We have to take a quick break.
Phil Singer Games is a tabletop cards and dice game company that has enjoyed success for over 3 decades. Their first game was Champions of the Galaxy and was released in 1986. Champions of the Galaxy is a tabletop game that features professional wrestling over 100 years in the future. Humans, aliens, and monsters battle in the Galactic Wrestling Federation for belts. Legends of Wrestling features officially licensed wrestling cards featuring stars like Ted DiBiase, Jimmy Snuka, Harley Race, and many, many more, including game sets for independent promotions. Each match takes place in real time. The action is fast and furious, and all the things that happen in pro wrestling, like cage matches, outside interference, three-man tag matches, they also happen in the games. You have the opportunity to run your own wrestling promotion involving either real-life stars or fictional characters of the future, or you can mix and match both. Visit PhilSingerGames.com for more information and to order the games today. That is PhilSingerGames, PhilSingerGames.com to order now. If you like horror movies, be sure to check out Dave Dynasty and Ike Isaacs on the Listen to Their Screams Horror Podcast. It is available on all podcast platforms and on social media at Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number 2, and Screams. Hey ho, everybody. Subscribe to the Pinhead Pod, the Ramones fan podcast, bringing you interviews, news, deep dives, and much more. Look it up on your favorite podcast platform. That is Pinhead Pod.
We're back on Wrestling Nostalgia.
And welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. This time I'm being joined by Bubba White, who wrestled as Goliath and Moondog Splat. Sir, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you. I'm still alive. That's a good thing.
That's right. That's right. So tell me, you're from Pittsburgh, right? Did you grow up a fan of the WWF?
Oh, yeah. I mean, my dad, we watched it from, it was on Channel 11. They taped it up at the Channel 11 studio, which I found out later, like when I was in my teens. But
yeah,
I didn't know where they did it when I was watching it on TV, you know.
Yeah.
But they had, you know, Bruno Sammartino, they had Batman, you know, Dominic DiNucci, all the, you know, big names in I guess the baby faces.
Yeah, well, I have to imagine being from Pittsburgh that Bruno was a hero of yours.
Oh, I mean, you know, I didn't watch it after like I was, you know, 12 or 13 years old. I, you know, into high school by then, but
yeah,
You know, I never followed it after that until I was probably out of high school and watched it every once in a while.
So, well, what led to you to decide to enter pro wrestling?
Nothing. I just was, you know, a job on the north side, you know, making X amount of dollars a day. It was kind of a repetitious type of work. Mm.
Yeah.
Building the same things. And then going out and getting drunk and getting with my buddies and getting into some, you know, wrecks and fights and bars and different stuff like that. And I decided finally I had enough of this. I got to go make some money. And that's why I really got in. I was hoping to, you know, I heard, you know, you got to take some things sometimes and, you know, it ain't easy, you know. So,
yeah.
Went in with the ambition.
Well, you started, you debuted, you went to Memphis for the CW in 86. Was that your first promotion?
Yeah, for full time. Before that, I had a tryout with the WWF as a hillbilly.
Okay.
And that was probably 6 months before, you know, I went down to Tennessee.
Yeah. So what kind of training did you get? Who trained you?
Guido Mongol.
Oh, yeah.
He had a ring in the side of a barn over top of a horse, but that was wild to be, you know, sitting there. You could smell the life of a farm.
yeah.
But I mean, it was a big ring, and he taught a little bit. I wouldn't say Guido taught like hands on, more or less. The more you learn, I was up there probably more lifting and getting in shape than I was in the ring. But you had to wait some of the days. Saturday was a busy day for people to show up, and then you'd go through some things in the ring with different people and, you know, learn as you go. But it was a slow process in learning. I really didn't get a match until I went up there for WWF and been a hillbilly, you know.
Yeah. So how did you end up in Memphis? Did they reach out to you? Did you reach out to them? How was that connection made?
Don Bruno came to me up at the gym and said, hey, uh-huh. you can't remember all the specifics, but and he got a hold of something down there. He goes, would you like to go down there? So we got pictures taken with me holding him up in the air and, you know, him resting on my shoulder or whatever. And next thing you know, within the next 2 weeks, we were going down to Memphis.
Yeah, and obviously you're a big guy, right? What, like 6'8", something like that?
And, yeah, 6'9".
Yeah.
I was probably about 430 pounds when I got in. I could never get weighed right, so no skills would get me unless I was at a truck stop.
Yeah.
And I wasn't at too many truck stops in my day, but.
Well, obviously in the 80s, you know, a guy at 6'8", 6'9", that's a coveted guy, right? That you were, that's, you know, people were going to, you know, come looking for you. And fitting name. No, go ahead.
Yeah, I know. I was, you know, hoping my size would, you know, get me in and get me on a start, you know. But you learn real quick. You get in, you know, and you find out it's more than what you think.
Sure. And,
so, you
and
know.
Yeah, when you went to Memphis, they called you Goliath, which, you know, an appropriate name. And eventually you teamed with Big Bubba, who was not the Big Bubba that we all, you know, most people know, but it was Fred Ottman. Later went by Typhoon and Tugboat. What was it like teaming with Fred?
Oh, we had some fun times, man. He always got on me. You know, I'll tell you, I am a lazy ass, but they used to get me up and get me going I know he'll laugh about that because he's always, you're going to be a fat pig all your life. And I'm like, Jesus, come on, man. We just lifted yesterday.
he started a year or two before you, I think, right? Was he kind of pushing you, helping you along a little bit, being new to the business?
Yeah, I mean, we both learn still. I mean, you know, being big as both of us were, it was hard to get tag teams to go against us, you know, or find people, you know, a good match. You know, we went against Billy Travis and Jeff, but, you know, we had great, great matches. And, you know, that you know, it's short-lived. You only probably get a for 30 days with, you know, somebody new comes in, you know. And, you know, when I was a Moondog, I got to wrestle the Bruise Brothers. They were big guys, twin brothers.
Ron and Don.
So, we had some great matches with them, you know.
Yeah. Well, like you mentioned, right?
As a Moondog, I didn't have any matches with Bubba with them, but we had some great times.
Yeah. Well, you and Fred, right, were managed by Downtown Bruno. And you mentioned he helped you get into Memphis. What did you think of Bruno? Because everybody always talks how Bruno's such a good guy.
No. You know, I just got to know him. He wasn't up at the gym a lot. And, you know, just getting to know him about it, come to me and approach me about, hey, you want to go down there? We need some pictures to show him, little promos of me and you together. So we sent him, you know, we got the pictures. We sent him down. He sent him down. And the next thing you know, he got a hold of me and said, hey, they want us down there. You know, and then we were thinking up names. And, you know, and then, oh, hey, Jerry the King Lawler, how about just call him Goliath, you know?
Yeah.
Or Jared, I don't know who gave the name, but, you know, we got down there. It was a venture in itself getting down there. But, you know, Bruno was a good guy, nice guy. I mean, you know, I wrecked his car. He let me pay him back, and you know, in payments. And I mean, you know, it wasn't like a big bill, but it was big enough for me just getting into all the trying to make money, and I was giving it away, you know, with my stupid antics.
You know. You got to tell us, is there a story there about you wrecking Bruno's car? Is what's that?
I can't remember, but I was driving, and it was outside of Memphis near the airport, I'm thinking. And, I mean, not outside of Memphis, outside of Nashville by the airport. And, I might've looked away and the cars in front of me stopped and I hit the guy, boom. And then he went forward and hit the guy in front of him. It was only about 5 mile an hour, maybe 10 at best, but, everybody was okay. And, you know, and most damage I think was the Bruno's car. And the other people, they just turned it into insurance. But I paid for Bruno's getting his Lincoln Continental fixed.
Yeah. Well, you and Fred had a pretty good run, right? You held the Southern Tag Titles, and you got to work with a lot of great teams there in Memphis. Did you have a favorite that you worked with there during the time? I mean, you worked with the Rocker, the Midnight Rockers, you know, Marty and Sean, and lots of other guys. Yeah. Did you have someone that you really enjoyed working with?
Man, you know, there's so many. Billy Travis and Jeff, I was so used to them for a while there. I'd have to say, you know, we had some great matches and we had good times, you know.
Yeah.
I would say I thought that the shows were good. And, but, you know, hey, Rocky Johnson, Virgil. They tag together.
That's who you end up dropping the you know, tag titles to, right? You know, it's Rocky Johnson or whatever, the Soul Man Jones or whatever, which the later Virgil. There's a lot of teams that came through there. Given your guys' size, especially working guys like, you know, Billy Joe Travis and Jeff Jarrett, there's a lot of that opportunity to work that, you know, that little underdog guy thing, which, you know, Jeff and Billy Joe were always so good at.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, but the Midnight Rockers, they weren't much. When I first met them, they were much bigger than Billy or Jeff.
They were
probably 210 at best. And I'm not saying that's bad. But, I mean, to me, at 430, I was like, these guys are the champs. Come on. But, I mean, we had a great match against them for the titles, but we didn't win them titles. But, we only got, I think, maybe worked them twice, maybe in Louisville and Memphis. I'm not sure. And they went back to the AWA or they got called up to the WWF. I can't remember everything that happened.
Yeah. They were. I'm sure the AWA tag champs that time and everything else. But, I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, of course, pretty much anybody working you guys, right? It would be a small team against
a couple of big guys. We worked the Moondogs. We worked the Moondogs. It was Spike and Spot versus me and Bubba, you know. And I liked Bill. Bill was a good dude. We went and seen him out of his place. He had a shop outside of Nashville. He had a garage where he fixed things, you know. But he got in. He was in the business. I didn't know. I thought he just got in just, you know, out of the whim. But he wrestled, I guess, local for a while down there. And they put the Moondogs up against us. So.
Yeah.
And then I broke my leg, and then I became a Moondog.
Well, in 91, right, you end up going to Puerto Rico for a bit. How did you end up?
I never went to Puerto Rico. That's somebody drugged me and caught me with some. I never went to Puerto Rico.
I don't know
how that story got started, but I never went to Puerto Rico. We was thinking about it because Doug Gilbert and Eddie Gilbert were down there.
Yeah,
at least Eddie was down there. Got killed down there, but we wrestled together over in Japan, and then we left there early because of a discrepancy of how they were treating things, the promotion over there in Japan. But they were talking about going down to, you know, Puerto Rico, and I never went, though. So
okay. There's a lot of online sources saved. Of course, you can't trust everything. But I was going to ask you, my next question was about Japan. How did you wind up in Japan?
Well, I wanted to, it was after I broke my leg, and I wanted to get over there because, hey, you know, if you make it in Japan, you know, and if you get asked back, it's kind of like you're making it if they ask you back after, you know, the first time I was there. So I got a hold of Sato. That's what I knew him by. He was a wrestler down in Nashville, him and Goto with Tojo Yamamoto. And I got a number from somebody, and I called to, Sato, and he got me over with SWS promotion over there in Japan.
Well, I got to imagine that those, given your size, those Japanese fans must have kind of taken to you. They like the big giant monstrous foreign heels, kind of, and you must have put them in awe a little bit.
Well, yeah, I mean, but I wrestled the first match I had. I tagged with the Warlord, and we wrestled the. I'm trying to think of the Tanaka brothers.
Yeah.
And the one dude was like 6'7".
Yeah.
The one brother.
Yeah.
And his brother wrestled as the Islander or something like that.
Yeah.
George Tanaka or whatever his real name. But anyway, then the guy they were really pushing me against was they wanted to be him to be the champion because he was the next sumo wrestler, grand champion or whatever. And that's why I went over there for him, was to, you know, give him a great match and make him look good and all that, you know. Anyway. Next thing you know, something happened. The guy got on the mic and exposed the business in Japan, which was, you know, a big deal. So I never got asked back for that promotion.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then that was that, you know, that was big, Earthquake was wrestling him over here in Japan, was wrestling this kid who they wrestled in sumo and, you know, they wanted to put him up against Earthquake in the Tokyo Dome.
Yeah.
And he got on the mic and said everything's this, everything's that, and exposed the business. And then put a hold on the tours. So I said, okay, I got to wrestle with Haku over there, Tito Santana, the Barbarian, the young Wild Samoans, kids. I got to wrestle with them over there, travel with them.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was great times, man. I thought everything was going to be better. And then I came back to Pittsburgh, and I was just doing the indie stuff.
Yeah, so who made the call to you to bring you back to Memphis? Because you did end up going back to Memphis, right? Like you mentioned, as one of the Moondogs. So who reached out to you?
Richard Lee.
Manager ironically, of the Moondogs, yep.
Richard Lee was the referee in my match when I broke my leg against Tracy Smothers.
Okay.
And now he calls me. I'm at work, working for a bar. I got called in that day to work a bar because a guy, something happened. And at the spur of the moment, all of a sudden the phone rings. I answer it. He goes, "Hey, is this, you know, whatever. I forget. Is this Bob?" And I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Hey, this is Richard Lee." You know, so next thing you know, I'm at work. I go, "Brother, I'm at work." And he goes, "Hey, would you like to become a?" So I said, "Let me call you back." So he gave me a number and I called him back. And everything went from there. You know, they said, "You come down, bleach blonde your hair, get some jeans that are comfortable and bleach them. Make them look rugged, you know, or whatever. Cut the things and fray the bottom part of the pants."
Yeah, yeah.
And,
well, I got to ask you, because there's this mystery. Have you been in contact with Richard Lee recently?
No, I don't know if he's dead or not. He was out at he went to California, and I don't know if it's true, but I heard he died. But that was the last thing. He was working at in a hotel or something out there in California, Hotel California. But anyway,
yeah, I mean, I'd heard he passed away as well, but it's like a lot of people don't know what happened to him when he left wrestling, and it's like, you know,
yeah, he went out to California is what I heard.
Well,
you know, he was a maintenance man or a manager or something like that.
Yeah.
And I don't know exactly, but I tell you what, he was a great guy. I tell you what, I liked Richard. We had a couple arguments a couple times, but I was still, you know, I was still learning about what to be a Moondog, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're a manager. I don't know what the hell's been going on the last 3 months before I come down here, you know. So,
but
Richard was a great guy. We had some fun times, and what a talent for music.
Mm. Yeah.
I would put him up against Jimmy Hart on that deal, because Jimmy Hart wrote a lot of songs for WWF.
Yeah.
I think Richard Lee, you know, was comparable to that. You know, you put him on the same level. I mean, I heard him some of the songs. He'd be playing them, you know, while we're staying at the apartment. And, I got to see him do it live at a tryout, and he won. So, you know, he could sing. We went to a lot of places after we wrestled, and they had you can come up on stage. Uh-huh. And he got up there and sang his heart out and played somebody's guitar and stuff like that. It was awesome. I'm sitting there going, "Holy heck, this guy, man, why is he in wrestling?" If I could play that good singing, I wouldn't be in wrestling.
Yeah. Well, when you came back to Memphis, right, you teamed with Spot and the Moondogs, right? And they called you Splat. So do you know who came up with the name Moondog Splat? Any idea?
Me and Richard were talking, and I don't know how it came about. And all I remember was, like, you know, when I came out of my mama, I hit the floor with a splat. And and I don't know if that was Richard or I really don't know. I think we were just going back and forth thinking of stuff. And next thing you know, splat, you know, something different.
Yeah.
And, you know, other than that, you know, Splat was born.
Yeah. Well, when you, I mean, being a Moondog in Memphis, right, that carries a lot of weight. And, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, several Moondogs, whatever else. Did you feel, I don't know, a certain level of pride with kind of being part of the team, being a Moondog in Memphis? Because that's a big deal.
Yeah. You know, Moondogs were up there before. And that's what Richard Lee said. Hey, you know, Vince McMahon's doing stuff with Jarrett, and he's looking at different things, you know, people coming down, you know, and maybe they'll take the Moondogs up there again. But then I found out there was a lot of heat between, you know, Spot and, you know, WWF. And, you know, and that's why his other partner left him, I'm trying to think of his name right now, but he left him, you know, from the Rex, Randy Crawley.
Yeah.
He left them because of the things that were going on. And that's what happened with me and Larry. There was things going on behind the scenes I just ain't gonna tolerate it anymore. I'm not gonna put up with that when we're all, you know, trying to make a buck. And I'm not gonna tolerate somebody stealing from me, you know.
Yeah, well, so plus, tell me about that.
Plus putting things up behind me and getting retaliated, you know, things in the ring that I wasn't. Wait a minute, they're saying I'm not subject to that. That's bull. So, on that note, I was like tired of the thing. I said I was getting ripped off. I said I'm getting out of here.
Yeah, so that's what ended up leaving, causing you to leave Memphis. So what? How were you getting ripped off? Tell me more about that. What was the issues going on that caused you to leave the Moondogs?
You know, we had pictures out on tables, and I trusted, you know, Larry. We went out there, we did Polaroids, and it was a couple of times I'm like, wait a minute, we did more Polaroids, and we're splitting at $5 a piece. So, you know, you'd say, okay, we did, you know, 20 Polaroids or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, and he's telling me, well, you're 10.
Okay,
and I mean,
gotcha.
I'm starting to wonder, you know, there were some things missing off the table. I said, where are they? I said, I paid for them. And we were going to split them together just on friendship, you know, being the tag team together. He couldn't come up with it. So, and I got mad and, you know, we started bickering. And next thing you know, I'm getting hit from the Harlem Knights. They're pounding the hell out of me with, you know, chairs and stuff like that. I'm like, dude, you know, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, I don't mind taking a hit, but Jesus Christ, why don't you just pick me up a punch and kick and whatever else, you know, don't be fucking, you know, metal chairs are enough. I've had enough of them over the fucking week, you know, excuse my French.
No, that's all right.
You put me back in the mood, you know.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
There was a lot of times I got hit with something and I was like, wait a minute, that wasn't nice.
Yeah.
I think he was trying to hurt me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously the Moondogs were known for that wild and unpredictable style.
And I knew that. So, I mean, I took a lot of boards, man.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of chairs there was times I took probably 15 boards in a week.
Right.
Chairs, you know, and but then when you were just cracking me with a 2x2 over the back of the head when I ain't looking, I don't take kindly to that.
Sure. And when when you became a Moondog, did Spot or Richard Lee, did they kind of help coach you a little bit on that Moondog style that, hey, this is what we do, this is how we do things, you know, that wild style? No,
I mean, we, you know, that's the way the Moondogs work. We, you know, I was looking at what was going across from me, constantly looking to see what's going on. And then, you know, you can kind of read what he's thinking. And I, you know, next thing you know, we'd set him up for a double slam against each other, you know, throw him into each other or, you know, put a hook, you know, hook a clothesline or something like that, you know, double team. And then we go for the finish, you know. But like I said, hey, you know, I didn't mind going down as a Moondog. But then when they asked me to come back with Spike, I'm thinking, hey, I like Spike. You know, Spike's a good dude. And I thought maybe we'll get in down there. Next thing you know, we had a trip to go to Japan with Doug Gilbert and Eddie Gilbert for a promotion over there. And things went haywire on that. All of a sudden, they started bringing a guy that stole something back, and he should have never been back. They told him never to come back to the promotion. And here, all of a sudden, he's wrestling again. And we left early because of that. Because nobody trusted, you know, Doug and Eddie didn't trust the guys. They stole stuff off other wrestlers that we heard. And I was like, hey, we got to leave then. You know, I ain't going to put up with that shit.
Yeah, and that was you and Spike then, right?
Richard Lee didn't get to go. It was just me and Spike.
Yeah, so who was Spike a guy that Spot brought in and trained, or who was he?
Yeah, as I said, he come in. The Moondogs were supposed to come in. It was supposed to be Rex and Spot.
Right.
And Rex, that's when they broke up. And then because they said they were coming in, and I guess Bill wrestled, Bill Smith, and he wrestled up there, you know, around there in Indy wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I guess Larry knew him, and he called him and said, hey, man, please find your hair. We're going to TV tomorrow.
Yeah.
Is what I think that is how the story went. But next thing you know, we were in a match against them, you know.
Yeah. Well, hey, tell me more about that, because I'm originally from Indiana. You think Spike came from wrestled up in Indiana, in the Indiana?
Yeah, we wrestled. Me and Spike and Richard Lee wrestled up in Indianapolis.
Right.
I think it was like the Armory or something like that.
Yeah, the Tyndall Armory probably.
Probably, yeah, the ammunition or was a jail and something like that at one time.
Yeah. So was this working for Bruiser?
I don't know who it was, but, you know,
this would have been after Bruiser. This would have been later after Bruiser, wouldn't it? Yeah.
I don't know. We wrestled the two guys. I guess they wanted us to, you know, don't squash them, you know, whatever, but make it look good, you know, and we did. I mean, it was a great match. And I thought it was, anyway. I thought we did good at what we were doing, but, you know, me and Richard after that night, that's when we had some bickering, but it was not the like major. I was like, hey, you ain't getting fucking hit and pounded, you know, and doing all the running. You're just fucking blowing the whistle and running around the fucking ring. It's basically how it got, you know, but, and then we settled it, you know.
So one of my questions, and I think you mentioned it earlier, is so you dyed your hair, right, to be a Moondog. Mm-hmm. Did they put that up front? Hey, you gotta bleach the hair blonde.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they go, yeah, you'll have to get your hair bleached. You know, you can, and then Richard was like, oh, you can get Lady Carol or Clairol or whatever the thing. I'm like, dude, I ain't doing it myself. I'm going to go to a professional and get it done if this is going to be right.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So I went to a friend of a friend downtown. It cost me $125 just for that. And I, you know, that ain't including the tip. But I was like, wow. And the guy, it took like 2 hours. He put me under heat lamp or a heat dryer. And in fact, on my way down to going back down to Nashville, I could feel the scars or the skin or something bleeding or just like this crusty stuff just falling out of my head where I got burned by the bleach, I guess. It was like squats over the top of my head, but they healed up, you know. But I was like, man, that dying your hair, man, it'll kill you.
Yeah, and I know Spot did a run, a few appearances with Smoky Mountain Wrestling. That was after you left Memphis, right? You didn't go to Smoky Mountain. Yeah, no. So you mentioned you had the falling out with Spot and everything and went to Memphis, worked some independents. Were you still working as Moondog Splat on the independents?
Yeah, I did some things up here in Pittsburgh, around Pittsburgh, Akron, Cleveland. I mean, I wrestled a whole bunch of indie shows all over, the Western Pennsylvania, Ohio, West Virginia area. And trying to think of, got distracted there.
That's all right. That Moondog name carries a lot of weight, right? You don't have to be in Memphis to know the Moondogs, right? I mean,
no, I got to wrestle a lot of big names. I got to wrestle Mick Foley, Rick Rude, a whole bunch of different guys that were in the business that, you know, I just get there because I was the biggest guy, you know.
Yeah.
I was there to put them over. I wrestled Nick the Bully Busick down in Wheeling. His area. You know, he was from the area originally. So we had a great, I fell down some steps. He goes, oh, yeah, I thought you were dead. He goes, you hit the, I said, man, brother, I was trying to get down to the flat spot. I said, I missed the first 5 steps. And I just said, hopefully it's going to end soon. But he pulled me back up, and we come back up, and we were fighting in the crowd, and it was a good time. Mick Foley was there. That was at my sister's high school. I wrestled there, and that's where I trained after I broke my leg. So, you know, I was up there a lot with my sister, you know, jagging around with the kids, and, you know, I was lifting in the gym when I broke my leg. But that match against Mick Foley, it was supposed to be against Jake the Snake Roberts, but then something happened, but then Mick Foley showed up. So I think it was a great match. And I don't know how the people knew he was last minute call, I think.
Yeah.
But people brought him props, man. They brought him the skillets, the washboards, the blackboards, stuff to break over my head when I was at we fought out in the crowd that night, and I was like, where the hell did you get all that stuff from? He goes, the fans give it to me.
Well, sure, I mean, Mick Foley versus a Moondog, right? That's you're expecting that to get wild.
Yeah, it was. I thought it was a good match. He liked it. We talked a lot afterwards. You know, he was going up to the WWF, and then I think he was actually knowing his name was changing to Mankind.
Yeah. Well, around 1997, you retired. So what ended up making you kind of hang it up and call it a career?
Well, I got married, and after a month, my wife was pregnant. After our marriage, and then I got a call to go to South Africa with a local buddy of mine here, Tarantula, and it was with Matt Bourne and CB Offey, me and T, and a midget from I hate saying that, like, but Roger from down in Tennessee. He came on the plane with us. We flew in this little guy from Mexico. Flew into Johannesburg. And that was a great trip. We were over there for 30 days. But same thing. I mean, all of a sudden the show was canceled. And the guy wanted to, like, not pay us for the last week. Where I said, hey, brother, we were here 4 weeks, man. You know, so we got all of our money. But, they wanted me to stay by myself. And I said, look, man, I ain't staying. My wife's pregnant. I said, you don't have to listen to her every day. You know, I said, I get it. She's, I want to be back here, but she don't realize we're 12,000 something miles away from each other,
Yeah.
You can't just hop on a plane and fly back, And that was a big thing. And I said, dude, I'll come back, but after my baby's born, I said, I'll gladly come back and do whatever you want. And, so. But that, and then it got bad over there. There was a lot of stuff with the whole country changing.
Yeah, right.
The apartheid or whatever. So it wasn't too safe to be somebody over there. And I'll say not the right color, but it got bad.
Yeah.
So,
Well, when you look back, right? You had a little over a decade in wrestling. So what jumps out at you? What's some of your favorite memories, right? You had a good run. You wrestled in lots of different countries and places. What jumps out when you think back to your years in wrestling as some of your favorite memories?
With Bubba and Bruno, I think some of the wildest times, one time we almost wrecked, it was a sleet of ice. We went over the hill, the car got stuck, going to Blytheville, Arkansas. That was a night and a half, Bruno, we hit this bridge and we started going sideways. Anyway, we didn't hit nothing, but we had to go back and pay a fine. We had to pay like $180 fine or we'd get called back to, for a trial or whatever. But the only way we lost for a trial is you had to put the $180 something dollars up.
Sure.
So we got past that. We still had time to get to the show. Next thing you know, it was bad. Bruno hit the brakes or something, and boom, we went over the hill. Car went down a good 10 feet down this ditch. And there was no way getting that out that night, And we crawled up the road. Somebody else picked us up and took us to the matches. I'd say probably 30 people showed up for the matches. It was a bad night. There was cars all over the place.
So when you look back on your career, you the first memories that pop in your head is teaming with Bubba, not the Moondog stuff.
No, it would be with Bubba, yeah.
Yeah, as your highlights, right?
Man, he got me going. He'd get on me all the time. And, JT Southern, we sort of hanging out with him at the gym. And that, back to his apartment a lot of times, just sat around bullshitting. And both of them kind of was on me all day. I was the butt end of all the jokes, but I didn't care. But I thought it was funny. Bubba was a howl. I tell you, one night we went to a McDonald's and we went walking in. It almost looked like it was closing, but we're like, hey, can we still get something? And the girl's looking at us like we're weird or something. And and then she starts going, you're them guys. We're like, yeah, what guys? she goes, them wrestler guys. And she's like looking like she's all scared. I'm like, because you read that's a fake stuff. And Bubba hit his head off the counter, off the steel, the stainless steel counter, put a dent in it with his head. And I look back at the girl and go, now you had to piss him off. Now he's going to want more food.
Well, I got to imagine, what when two near 400-pound guys walk into a McDonald's, I mean, what's that order like? That's got to be a lot of food that's getting ordered at a McDonald's.
Yeah, we carry these little bank bags with all of our stuff in them. You know, we both come in like little purses. You know? Who knows what they were thinking, but they were, you know, like the bank bags, these little rubber bank bags with a zipper on them. That was our whole life. We had everything in it, every receipt, everything we bought when we were on the road. It was all write off. Clothes we wore on TV and everything. You know, I learned a lot, but Bob and me, that's where I learned the most. And that was probably the most reflective time being in wrestling. And there was a lot of other times. Doug Gilbert and Eddie Gilbert over in Japan, that was some great times with Bill. You know, we had a great time. And then turn sour and, hey, you just got to come home.
Sure. Yeah, I had Fred on the show, I don't know, a year or so ago, a little maybe. I don't know when it was. And he's such a good guy, man. He's just such a nice guy. And just a really good guy. I was so happy to see him, you know, get the, you know, it's a Hall of Fame. I know it doesn't mean anything, but I was happy to see him, you know, get some exposure and get on there and get it, you know, talk about John Tenna and get a little attention because he deserves it.
He did a long run with Big John. When I got to meet him, they brought me into Cincinnati for another tryout. And, I don't know if I was going to be a third natural disaster or what is going to be. But, you know, I had still bleached blonde hair a little bit, and the kind of roots were coming in. But anyway, I got to wrestle Tito Santana and a kid from Cleveland, Chamberlain, I think his name was. Last name was Chamberlain. But anyway, I thought I'm in. Next thing you know, I wasn't getting talked to. And next day, we'll call you. And I never got a call, so.
Yeah. Well, that's
who knows?
That's wrestling.
You know, things worked out for what it was. I got married. I have, you know, kids that both of them went through college, and I'm proud of that. Because I didn't. You know, I'm a dumbass. But, you know, my kids got through college, and something that I couldn't probably put up with. You know, I couldn't go to the Army either, you know. I hate people telling me what to do, but...
So
I got therapy for that, but
you couldn't handle people telling you what to do, and you entered wrestling. That's interesting.
Yeah. And that's where you learn. You start going, you know, hey, you want to do this tonight? You're gonna get smacked with a 3-foot board, 1 foot wide, 1/2 inch thick. You know, you're gonna be able to take that. They're gonna come popping out from behind a curtain. You gotta be surprised. I was surprised after that hit my head. I'm going to tell you that.
Yeah. So are you still in touch?
Soul Train. That was where Soul Train,
Virgil.
Rocky come bursting out of curtains at Memphis.
Yeah.
And it was with boards. It was after that, we were getting hit boards every week.
So are you still in touch with anyone from wrestling?
Oh, yeah, I still talk to Fred. He's about the only one. I went and seen him. He came to Pittsburgh on a signing tour out of Borough Overways. And I went out and stood in line and waited to get up there. And then all of a sudden he looks up and sees me and starts talking. So I finally got up and I went behind the table with him. And I stood there and, you know, people were taking pictures of us. And, you know, I don't think half the people or 90% of the people knew that we were tag team partners before that.
Sure. So, speaking of sign up, do you ever get out and make any appearances, any conventions? You ever get back to Memphis?
I was working the indie shows. I was working as a bouncer, security. I was a bartender, manager down at Sammy's Corned Beef, and did bouncing for the family. And then when I finally got out of wrestling because I had a great job with them. I was making good money. Working for the family, and I was still doing independence, hoping for a break. And finally, I said, "Nah, you know, I'm married, kids aren't, you know, I got my son, daughter came a year later, year and a half later, and
yeah.
I said, that's it. I'm done all the way officially. Especially yeah. when my daughter was born. I didn't do any matches after my son was born, but I had hopes, you know, but I stayed in shape. But yeah. I finally just said, that's enough of that.
Are you still in the Pittsburgh area then?
Yeah, I live North Hills, north of Pittsburgh. It's called North Hills.
Gotcha.
Township. Yeah. So, you know, Ross Township, but it's called the North Hills. But
well, you never know, man. Because
I grew up in Bellevue, which is just south of North Hills, so I knew all yeah. about the North Hills there. So,
well, you never know. Nostalgia and history, sales and wrestling. You never know. Those fans of Memphis probably remember Splat. You never know when someone will come calling for you to do a signing or something. So
I do have a signing. I have a signing coming up in Pulaski in August.
Yeah,
at the Kayfabe Cave.
Yeah, gotcha.
And we'll be doing that on the 23rd of August. I'll be doing pitcher signing and stuff like that. It'll be the first one. And I gave out so many pitchers when I was behind the bar.
Yeah.
People would come in like, are you standing on something? And I just start laughing, go, nope, I'm on the same floor as you, you know. And then they see my picture. Is that you? Because my boss hung up a picture on the wall.
Yeah.
Up on the ceiling, near the ceiling and up. And we had, you know, Virgil was there. His picture was up there. And, you know, a couple other people that came through. Anyway.
So you said that's at the Kayfabe Cave, you said, right? In August? Is that there in the Pittsburgh area?
No, they're down in Pulaski.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Well,
Pulaski, Tennessee. So that's right outside of Nashville.
Gotcha.
When I talked to the guy, I knew I said at Pulaski, I know we wrestled there because it seemed like I remember them. We did our promos going, you know, we had to do, hey, we're going to be at Pulaski, guys, that kick ass. You know, whatever. But might even did a radio station there. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, there you go. If people want to get an autograph or a picture with a Moondog Splat, there's a chance coming up. First one, you say, right? First signing you've done. Yeah. So, never know. It might lead to more.
Yeah, first signing. I mean, I worked at the bar, and I had pitchers laying around. Like,
you know, of course, yeah.
Some people, you know, I'd say, here, and they want to give how much? I go, I can't charge. You know, what am I going to charge? You know.
Sure.
So, it worked out both ways. They were appreciative of the pitcher, you know, getting it for their kid or for them or whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know, they probably throw an extra couple bucks on a bar as a tip, you know. I don't, you know.
Yeah. Sure. So, yeah. Well, tell me.
That was a lot too. I did that was for a while, you know, after wrestling. I did probably 20 years of bartending and bouncing and a lot of it bartending. And that was an experience in itself. You know, I bet you I got more stories throwing people out of the bar and out of nightclubs than I had wrestling stories. I'm going to tell you that.
I bet. Yeah. Well, you're on Facebook, right? Do you have a Moondog Splat page or anything? And is a way for people to follow you or to see if, you know, any of these signings do pop up or anything they want to reach out to you?
My kids, I would have to ask them to do it. I probably wouldn't do it for myself. But, you know, to make a Moondog page, I don't know. I don't know what, you know, I don't know what my net worth is on that.
Well, so, I mean, are you open, though, to people if they want to reach out to you, shoot you a message and share some memories?
Yeah,
or ask
I mean, if they know, if they get on there and they know who Bubba White is, that's about the only thing. But I've posted pictures if they are on the feed or on the news thing.
Yeah.
I posted pictures of myself and stuff I did in the past, but you know, I don't look for the glory. I really don't. But it's fun to, if people get excited about signing a picture, I get just as excited, you know.
Sure. I mean, really,
we did the Moondogs. We got the first, that was the first time I ever got to take pictures with people as a Moondog. We couldn't sell pictures when I was Goliath.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
You weren't allowed, but not, and then they started letting the bad guys and good guys. So the Moondogs were kind of like in between, I guess. And we go out and meet the people, and we take Polaroids, and, you know, it was so fun to see kids' reactions and parents' reactions and the people's reactions, you know.
Yeah.
Scared of you, you're like, you're like, look at them like, yeah, you better be scared and get stupid. But, I mean,
the Moondogs are just such a staple of Memphis. It didn't matter, face or heel, you know, people knew, hey, this is the Moondogs are Memphis. And that's what they, you know, they correlated. So so there you go. If anybody wants to reach out to you and you know, share some stories or share some memories there, you're on Facebook. And the good thing is wrestling fans have a long memory. They don't forget. So
I'm Bubba White. I went with Bubba before Bubba was Big Bubba. So and the other Big Bubba. I was Bubba before that. I think I got called at 8 years, 8 year old. My buddy from school called me Big, you know, you're Bubba. Like Bubba Smith, the football player, and that's stuck ever since. So
that's how
my mom didn't like. My mom didn't like the nickname, but you know, but hey.
Did she ever cave it in? Ended up calling you Bubba?
No. Nobody really called me Bubba. You know, nobody in wrestling. I just went by, you know, Goliath, whatever, Big G, Goliath, or, you know, they, Bob. You know, that's my real name, so.
Yeah. Well, to me, I don't know. I always think of you as Splat. That's how I knew you. That's how I saw most of you was, you know, for better or worse, great. For good or bad.
I loved being a, you know, Moondog because it was not, sure. You didn't have to work a lot. You didn't, there was no interviews. You just sat there and barked and looked crazy and, you know.
Yeah.
But it was great times. I mean, it was so fun to mess with people and, you know, put your head through the ropes and that people would jump back, you know.
Yeah.
Even in the indie stuff, I did stuff, you know, kids wouldn't get out of my way. They go, you ain't allowed to hit me. And I go, And then after they seen what I did in the ring, I cracked the guy over the head with the bone and, you know, and he's selling it and he's bleeding. And I jump out of the ring and they ran in. I go, yeah, you run now, huh? Yeah. Changed your mind, did you?
That's right. Well, Bubba, it was fun to do that. Yeah. Sure. And Bubba, I appreciate you coming on and talking to me. It's been fun talking about your career and your time. No problem. And like I said, I always loved the Moondogs in the incarnation. I remember, you know, Splat coming through. Like I said, I'm from Central Indiana, so I got the Memphis stuff out of Louisville. So I remember Splat coming through there. And so it's been a fun talking to you. And maybe we'll do it again down the road.
You know, if you ever need more stories, I got more stories. Sure. Right? You know, I could pull out. You know,
not that they're
fake, but these are all real stories.
We may have to revisit because I'm curious. I'm curious about some of these bouncing and bartending stories. Those have got to be some fun times. So we may have to revisit.
Hey, I'll tell you what, real quick. I got one of the Undertaker when I was doing my tryout.
Oh yeah, okay.
The Undertaker. Somebody punched his hat through the other way. He's down in Cincinnati. And somebody punched his hat out the other way, and he got, you know, pissed as hell. And he's like, and I started looking around like, who punched his hat out, man? He's fired up. And then Ric Flair comes over, tries to talk him down. You know, he's like, fuck you, Ric. You don't mess with your shit. You know, and I'm sitting there going, man, he is fucking pissed about that. You know, but I looked around to make sure nobody was pointing at me, too. You know, saying this new guy did it, you know.
Right, yeah.
But that was, man, I never seen anybody more pissed than that was the Undertaker.
I bet, yeah. Oh, well, Bubba, thank you for coming on. And like I said, maybe we'll revisit down the road and tell some more stories.
You know, all you got to do is reach out and get a hold of me.
Hey, you bums, we have to take a quick break.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here, curator of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, inviting you guys to listen to many of the programs here as part of the WrestleCopia brand, including, but not limited to, the Wrestling Memory Grenade, currently covering the 1988 and the WWF project. You can also listen to the Regional Wrestling Podcast, where we talk the territories, whether it's Jamie Ward with Georgia 81, Roman Gomez with the UWF in 1986, or Gene Jackson covering Memphis in 85. Three projects going on right now over there at Regional Wrestling. You can also listen to The Wrestling Stoop with the legend himself, Bob Roop. Bob goes back in time each and every week, covering not just his career, but countless stories and interactions with hundreds of wrestling names spanning his two decades in the business. But that's not all. You can also check out the Puro Wrestling Academy with the professor of Puro Resu, Mr. Dan Ginnity. Dan and I go back in time and cover the history of Japanese professional wrestling in the English language. And you can listen to all of those shows and more, all part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, located over at WrestleCopia.com. That's WrestleCopia.com, and anywhere your podcast streaming needs are met, from Apple to Spotify, Pocket Cast, and beyond. And while you're at it, why not subscribe to our social media guys for all the latest goings on here at the WrestleCopia Podcast Network? Plus, I'm constantly adding old school video clips and pictures from throughout wrestling history. You can follow us over on X, formerly Twitter, at Wrestling Grenade. That's at R-A-S-S-L-I-N Grenade. Also, follow and like me, Facebook.com/Wrestling Grenade. And why not subscribe to YouTube.com/Wrestling Grenade? So if you're looking to support that next up-and-coming podcast brand, please consider making it WrestleCopia.
Hey, it's Bob Smith, and guess what? The outdated Wrestling Hour is now part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network. But hey, no fear, you're still going to hear the unique guests, comedy, music, authors, journalists, funny people. Who knows who's going to end up on the outdated Wrestling Hour? Remember, it's all new and all old. So check it out in the WrestleCopia Podcast Network and wherever you get your podcasts. Listen if you know what's good for you.
Hey everybody, Gene Jackson here, inviting you to check out the Retro Wrestling Review, where each week I'm joined by some great co-hosts who help me review classic episodes of USWA Championship Wrestling, and right now we are doing week-by-week reviews of 1993. But we don't just do reviews, sometimes we get a chance to interview some of the people who were there and lived it, plus do watch-alongs. It's a lot of fun, so check out new episodes that drop every Wednesday at WrestleCopia.com. And to find links to everything associated to the podcast, you can go to uswapodcast.com.
We're back on Wrestling Nostalgia.
All right, and thank you to Bubba for coming on and doing that interview with me. Thank you for joining us and listening. You guys can follow me on social media. I'm on pretty much all the platforms. Just look up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty or at The Dave Dynasty. Also, make sure you go check out all the WrestleCopia Network of podcasts. You can find them on social media as well. And you can find the shows on your favorite podcast platform or by going to WrestleCopia.com. Also, be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. Go to ClassicWrestling.net and then download the app on all of your smart devices. Now, next episode is fun. It's an interview I've already done it. It's already in the bags. This is a gentleman that I've communicated with quite a bit online over the years, and we just never really had a long form conversation like this. So I'm super excited. Next week, my guest will be wrestling historian and collector Tom Burke. We will talk about collecting, his fandom, Bull Curry, and much, much more. It was a blast. I can't wait for you guys to hear it. That is coming next episode. Guys, thank you for joining me. Like I said, thank you for supporting me on social media and everything that you do. And always remember, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.
Wrestling Nostalgia is copyright Dave Dynasty. Bruiser voice done by John Lawson.